Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Hi.
Hello, and guess who is back?
Yes, after a short little 2-week stint there of nothingness, I decided to come back, Josh.
Imagine that, huh?
Imagine that. I have no idea why.
Do you know why you came back? It's
why?
Because you wanted to shop at adamandeve.com using the promo code STATIC.
And if I'm right, you have to actually be recording on the show in order to use that code. Or can anybody use that code?
Anyone can do it. It's just that simple. You're going to love my nuts.
Wow. No, are they available at adamandeve.com?
No, it's from that Slap Chop infomercial where the guy goes, "It's just that simple. You're gonna love my nuts."
Okay, so
it was
let's,
a bad pun.
So
sorry.
let's say I go to AdamandEve.com and I find something I really like. Is it the code, if I remember right, is Vince? Right? Is that
static?
STATIC,
static.
And what do I get for using static at the very end when it says put in your promo code here?
50% off of a single item.
Okay.
3 free DVDs.
All right.
A free mystery gift, and they'll even cover shipping in the United States.
That is an amazing deal. Screw this show. I'm going to go order something now.
Type, 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 type. I can typing. I just picture you. I can typing.
just waving my arms at the keyboard, hoping something right comes out.
So you're one of my trolls.
That's my writing process. I'm not like I've found 2 or 3 of our fans that are actually really, really good writers, including one that sent me some fan fiction, by the way.
Okay.
And you saw the fan fiction as well.
I thought it was funny.
Yes, it was hilarious, and they got our voices down right. And you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking that we should eventually do a dramatic reenactment of that.
No, I think it would actually make a funny little 20-minute short film.
I think, it would. It would make a very interesting short film. But you know me and anything beyond audio, I get really stupid. That's your domain.
What, getting stupid or fixing that?
No, getting stupid, we're both pretty good at, yeah.
So we babbled for almost 3 minutes. You want to actually get into the topic?
Sure.
Or just babble some
sure.
more?
Well, really, I guess if we get into the topic, it'll just be us babbling about a certain topic.
It's true. I wanted to talk to you about music. No, before we get into a fight, not like us playing our music or our musical tastes. I want to talk about certain things in the music industry
that I
wanted to bounce off you and get your perspective on.
Okay. Because
there are some things I don't understand, some things that just bug me about the music industry in general, musicians, things like that. Like, for example, I don't like this word, but it's the only one that fits right now, trends in music.
Okay, yeah.
For example, do you remember when grunge first hit the scene in the early 90s?
Oh, yes.
And how it absolutely murdered hair metal?
Right, yeah.
Now, I'm not a fan of hair metal. I'm not a fan of grunge.
Right.
But I don't see why could those two things not coexist. Why did everybody, I'm talking fan-wise, go, grunge is this new thing? Fuck you, hair metal. You're old school. I'm not listening to you anymore. Because, I mean, it was almost just like falling off a cliff where hair metal went, pew, and grunge went, whoop. Yeah. Was there only so much disposable income and everyone said, I want the Pearl Jam album, fuck the Poison album, or what?
That's part of it. Why couldn't heavy metal and doo-wop survive together? Why didn't we hear, you know, why didn't we still hear from the Four Tops and Frankie Valli and that crowd at the same time we heard from
Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin?
I'm trying to go
to the same time frame you're talking about.
And I know I'm backing up a little bit, but that's, you'll notice that happened at the end of the 50s, man. Doo-wop just zing down. And then you had things like the hippie movement and drug rock and metal kind of in its infancy. Jethro Tull and the flute come in to take its place. And part of that is, I think it's almost a generational thing. I mean, you and I being kids in the 80s, we were raised on hair metal. Maybe not my parents, because my parents have very strange taste in music, but my sister had her metal bands and her rock bands that she followed in the 80s and her new wave movement that she listened to. And grunge came along and the 90s came along. You know, you had the same thing happen with, you know, new wave and hip hop. You had new wave as a pop movement.
New wave was punk pussified.
Well, kind of, sort of, yeah. It was
punk made radio friendly.
It was punk meets glam meets that 1980s. I am the greatest.
And also the very synthy sound.
Yeah.
Look at us. I can't electronic. You know?
New wave was, it was punk coming in, meeting up with some pop and some what a lot of artists believe was more meaningful lyrics, meets synth, because synthesizers in the 80s finally got cheap enough and decent enough on the recording floor that more than just a few specialty people could afford them.
No matter what you're going to say, the synthetar is one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. The keytar. I've also heard it called a synthetar.
Yeah.
Those are some of the dumbest things. You look like an idiot. You did then, you do now.
Yeah, but now you can kind of relish in looking like an idiot.
Hipster
kind of
douche.
Enjoy it. But nonetheless, you had all of this stuff meeting synthesizers that were, and electronic instruments that were actually affordable, and so we got new wave. And you'll notice that it fell off in favor of the more urban inner city when you had rap come up.
Which is why I'm asking, why can't two genres coexist? Because for the longest time, hair metal coexisted with thrash metal, and thrash still continued to coexist with grunge. So it's not like there was, we can't have two types of metal going together. But why did grunge just murder hair metal, whether hair metal deserved that killing or not?
I mean, it didn't really murder it. It's just that hair metal moved from the mainstream movement into the niche fans that still loved it. I've got friends that still adore hair metal and still listen to it to this day. When those hair metal bands, which, let's face it, they're aging, when they put out a new album, he's really excited about it, and that's the way it goes. It just didn't stick around in the mainstream. Part of that, and let's, again, I'm going to go back to the transition from the 50s to the 60s. When the hippie movement came about, you had this entire youth movement that rebelled against the parents. You know, never trust anybody over 30.
I think the phrase was never trust anyone over 30.
And I heard it in a commercial of all places for some sort of new Medicare healthcare, going, never trust anyone over 90. And I'm just like, oh, that's sad.
That's a whole different topic.
That's a whole different topic.
When the counterculture gets misappropriated.
Right. But you had this youth counterculture coming in, and they were saying, no, screw you, mom and dad. Screw you, grandma and grandpa. We're going to do our own thing. And that's where we got the 60s movement from.
But then, to me, like...
And that's... Well, I'm saying that's what killed the music. And when the 90s came in, and kids, let's face it, that 18 to 24 demographic, and even younger in the 90s, because when you talk music, you still have artists that shoot from, you know, age 10, 11, 12, that preteen,
yeah,
into the tween. Hi, Justin Bieber today.
I'm actually going to bring him up later. So.
We will get there. But, you know, you've got anybody from that age group on up to the ever so important 18 to 24 wanting to discover and use their own kind of music to come into the mainstream. And that's precisely what happens with any of these movements. And then that's why we have a cultural shift, if you will, in general, is just it's a new generation coming in and they kind of want to slough the old music and let it go by the wayside.
Because
and
one of the things that bugs me when that kind of thing happens, it happened in your example in the 60s, it happened with the hair metal grunge thing,
right.
It's happened with all these where one genre, for lack of a better term, murders another genre. The murdering genre always has, and I will use this term, pseudo-arrogance to them.
Because yes.
Everyone, oh, grunge, it's so deep and meaningful. Oh, it's not just singing about partying. I'm sorry. That grunge stuff is so pseudo-intellectual, it actually makes me angry.
We'll leave that out of it for now, because you and I
disagree. But the same thing happened with the hippie movement. Man, our songs are about something now, man.
Yeah, our
no, they're not. They're about getting high. That's no different than what the Four Tops were singing
not
about,
all
really.
Of them. Not all of them.
When that shift happened, yes, you hadn't had the Vietnam's era songs and things. Yes, when that shift happened, it was all about, dude, we can sing about getting high now, man, and it'll be on the radio.
Yeah.
So no, it was all this pseudo-profundity that really amounts to nothing, and that's what I still get from people about like the grunge thing. Man, hair metal was just about partying and drugs. Grunge is about actually trying to affect our world, man.
Well, grunge, let's face it, it was the 90s. Grunge was about feeling things.
It was the beginning of fucking emo, if you really get down to it. That's not something to be proud of, Scott.
Well, no, it's... screw you. I am. I still like grunge.
I've never liked grunge.
I know.
You know, to me, grunge, it killed heavy metal, not just hair metal. Because you remember Headbangers Ball? I don't remember if you ever watched it or not.
Yes.
How it went from, okay, we're playing grunge music all day long on MTV, and we're also going to stop playing Anthrax and Nuclear Assault and Exodus and all that because we want to play grunge on Headbangers Ball now because that's all that matters.
Because at that point, hair metal didn't matter. It didn't matter. Punk didn't matter anymore. Punk had its day in the 70s.
Early 80s, actually. The big heyday was about 77 to 82.
Yeah, so late 70s, early 80s. It had its heyday, and people moved on, you know, because punk was about something.
It was more than grunge was.
Yeah, but at least grunge knew how to play their instruments.
I'd argue with that.
Anyway,
no,
before we
all right.
start going at each other's throat.
But then there's also things like you brought up Justin Bieber, who I was going to bring up anyway. When this kid first hit the scene, I said to myself, I give him a year and he's burnt out and he's gone.
Nope.
Why? I'm saying why? Because all the other pop idols had a year, 2 years, done. Why has Bieber stood through this? I hate to say stood the test of time because his music certainly doesn't. But why is his popularity still there when so many other pop icons, and that's a whole nother part of this, the whole pop icon thing.
Because Bieber hit a very special and very valuable button. He hit on, I mean, first off, it's, I realize it's not, but in the eyes of many of his fans, it's a true, absolute rags to riches fantasy story of this kid that's discovered on YouTube, and the next thing you know, he's one of the world's biggest pop idols. Now, he, and I gotta give him credit, he does play his instrument, and he's not that bad at it. He's no aficionado, he's no genius, but he's not that bad. But he was at that perfect age to get ingrained in what a lot of pop idols go for, and have since the boy bands. And actually,
That's another thing I was going to bring
actually
up.
I was going to say, since even, you know, the rise of doo-wop, the doo-wop and Frankie Valli and that crowd was the 1950s version of, you know, the boy band of the 90s and the Bieber of today. they try and get ingrained into that preteen girl's brain, because there's something in that preteen girl's brain that when they lock on to something,
puberty makes them wacky.
Yeah, it's often for life, and they really lock on and they become rabid fans. And then, you know, Bieber was just the perfect age that they can watch his dating and, you know, oh, he's so happy with her. They're going to get married and have kids, and it's going to be a big fantasy. And
come on, he looks like a lesbian.
And then they take off and or break up, and oh, that bitch, we hate her now because we love Justin. And he was. It's just that age. It's that perfect lock-in age. New Kids on the Block. I mean,
I remember when
we were
hit,
in middle school, high school, school, beginning of high school. Remember the girls that went absolutely crazy, and they each had their own that they kind of locked onto.
And then that became, okay, I'm trying to remember. There was All for One,
NSYNC,
98 degrees.
God, who else did we have at that time? There were a bunch of them.
When you get to those bands, they all sound exactly the same. If you played any song from one of those four bands that we just mentioned, I would not be able to tell you what goddamn band it was, because they all sound exactly the same. You could pick a random band, random song, and it would sound exactly like the next random band, random song that you pick. So why is that so popular?
To you and I, yes. And I'll thoroughly admit, I'm right there with you. I couldn't tell... I'm trying to pick LFO from 98 degrees from One Direction, even if you want to go with a boy band of today. I can't tell them apart. But to a fan, they can. If you play me some punk and some of the metal that you like, for the most part, with very few exceptions, I can't tell them apart. My friend had a Dead Milkmen cassette that he found the other day, and he popped it into his car cassette player.
If it was Big Lizard in My Backyard, that's a great album.
I have no idea what it was, but he played all of the songs on this Dead Milkmen thing, and I couldn't tell where one ended and another began. They all sounded exactly the same to me. So that's why they sound the same to us. But to a true fan, to an aficionado, and I have no doubt that we've got a fan out there going, what are you talking about? 98 degrees was nothing like New Kids on the Block and Mem and NSYNC, and they had Justin and 98 degrees and these guys, and you're stupid. And
what about sticking with the boy bands thing, or even the Spice Girls, or any of they had sort of the chick band.
Sure.
Had a revival.
They had a nice little revival,
Are the fans ignorant, whether they like the music or not, ignorant of the fact that these things are all prepackaged, pre-produced, that these are all designed specifically to do exactly what they're doing to you as their fan? Does that not, it's condescending to you as the listener.
They were at one time, but, punk fans...
At least punk was organic.
Punk was organic for
it wasn't prepackaged until it became new wave.
It was organic, yeah. It was organic for a few years, and then it got prepackaged and was meant to do that. Once somebody discovers a formula, that formula will be packaged and sold throughout all time. And I think back, again, going back to our youth of the 90s and stuff like that, at that age. At that coming of age, I don't think it matters whether it's pre-produced or not. I don't think it really matters if they're aware of it or not. And I'm not sure if the girls that were fans of New Kids on the Block and stuff were aware that it was prepackaged. We've got Dawn was a huge New Kids fan.
Well, okay, a perfect example.
We'll have to ask her.
A perfect example of a parody of that hit it dead on. Is the 1985 Cheech and Chong home video Get Out of My Room. Do you remember that one where Cheech is Ian Rotten of the Ian Rotten Band? He is an absolute parody of the prepackaged heavy metal, and it is a beautiful satire. It is a perfect dead-on. If you people want to see what Scott and I are talking about, that try to find a copy of Cheech and Chong's Get Out of My Room.
I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere.
I'm sure it is. But I'm just saying that is a perfect example of even that early. In 1985, they saw this and went, we can call the bullshit on this for all the heavy metal movement, that this is prepackaged nonsense.
Well, I'm not even sure if the bands were aware that they were prepackaged because of how young they get these people.
Is Justin
Bieber today, is today's generation a little bit more cynical than ours? Yeah, probably. But then, I don't think it matters.
Okay, and then going back to everything sounding the same, even like on metal, there are bands that, why do you think bands either change their sound too much that they don't sound like themselves anymore, mm-hmm. or refuse to change? For example, AC/DC, once Brian Johnson became their singer, every goddamn song sounds exactly the same. Yeah. Motorhead, every fucking song is the same song. It's the same beat. It's this. I mean, literally, all they change is the lyrics and the tempo.
Well, let's. You can find this on YouTube. There's a guy that played two Nickelback songs, one out of one speaker, one out of the other, and they match up almost perfectly. And again,
because is it that they found a formula?
Yes, and that is precisely it. They hit on something that sold and sold well. They hit on a formula that did well. It's the right, you know. Let's move into the dance theater that I know you know very little about.
Yeah, this
but
is
let's,
your area.
Let's move into the dance theater, and we have the 90s, we have rave. Which, with rave, you're talking 140, 160 beats per minute, that classic unts, 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 and that sticks through rave. And a lot of rave, I went to many raves, I like techno. I love girls on MDMA that are scantily clad and say, put
to
your
me,
hands
techno,
on me.
All you, sound, you yeah. can, yeah, you can play any techno song. I would not be able to tell you where one ended and one,
I
unless
understand.
The singer has a vastly different voice.
Yeah.
It's the same shit to me.
But nonetheless, we're in the 90s. It's the rave. We hit that beat. It somehow triggers the right endorphins in the brain.
I'm sure ecstasy helps.
Yeah, MDMA helps. And the flashing lights and everything, and we've got our rave going, and it's going unts, 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 about that fast. Suddenly this decade hits, the 2000s hits, and over in England, where the dance scene is a whole lot more popular than here in the States,
true,
we get a new movement. And I thought of it as the techno crowd was getting tired. Because dubstep moved in. And when dubstep moved in, number one, you ended up with these weird digital sound oscillators that could take the bass beat, that thump, 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 thump that hit the chest at techno and release those endorphins and everything. And you can suddenly slow it down and prolong that bass. And that's where we get the wah, wah, wah of dubstep. From it's turning a dial on an oscillator and stretching out that bass note like you wouldn't believe, and you're able to prolong that thump in the chest, so songs slow down. You get between usually 95 to 100 beats per minute. You'll if I play dubstep right next to 90s techno, you'll notice that dubstep is much slower.
It's just as annoying to me.
It's just as annoying to you, but it is a much slower beat because we're able to prolong that bass, and that part of the big movement of the bass scene, of the dance scene, is being shaken and feeling the music.
And
that's,
see, I think I know.
So
what,
that's what
I think I can see what you're
from.
Talking about, because metal went through that same thing with the. But leaving the vocals out of it with the whole death metal movement. Because, you know, metal and thrash, you had the very fast speed of, like, you know, of bands like the Cro-Mags and that. And then you had Napalm Death. And it was the same kind of stuff, just really slowed down and distorted. And then the horrendously bad vocals. I'm sorry, even as a metal fan, that's not singing. That's not vocals. It's irritating as shit to me.
Okay.
Same as the opposite direction.
You get some, the King Diamonds.
Grandma! No, even I heard one on the radio coming when I was driving here. Judas Priest, something off Stained Class, all of a sudden. And he's like, you know, it was like, heading out to the highway! And I'm just like, oh my God, did you just castrate yourself? I'm sorry, that's not cool. It wasn't cool in the 80s. It's not cool now, Rob Halford.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming to stage, the castrati.
I don't want a eunuch singing.
But no, it, yeah, and it. But you'll notice that today the beats are slowing down. And again, it's that I want to, at least as far as dance scene, because I really don't know anything about the metal scene. I'll just be honest with you right now. It's that we want to feel it in our chest, and we're able to prolong this. We can stretch out the thumps, if you will, into wubs, which is why you get dubstep. But so that's part of it, is whoever does it comes upon a formula that works. It and music is one of those things that is brilliantly subjective. What I love and what I enjoy is not necessarily going to be what Joe Schmo loves and enjoys. It certainly isn't what you love and enjoy.
I don't know. I think there are a few things that everyone can agree sucks, like Nickelback or Limp Bizkit. See, I think everyone can agree that's fucking garbage.
You can hate on Nickelback and Limp Bizkit all you want. They still fill arenas.
Which just boggles my mind.
Okay. It boggles my... Your music collection boggles my mind. But the one thing that we can agree on is that songs that emotionally hit you. They speak to you for some reason.
We got to talk about like the emo shit of the 90s.
We'll get there. But and I'm not talking about the emo type of emotionally hit.
Well, because when you said emotion, all I thought of was Morrissey and The Cure and all those, I cut myself to feel human.
We'll get there. But that's... Going back to my point, a song that emotionally speaks to you, that riles something up in your gut, you have to admit that when a song hits you, it hits deep.
Yeah.
And I'm the same way. When a song hits me, it hits deep. And that's the one thing where all music fans have in common, regardless of what genre they love, regardless of what songs they listen to. It doesn't matter whether it's dubstep or Justin Bieber or metal or any of the genres of metal or punk or grunge. The songs that hit them hit deep. Once a band discovers that formula of how to really stir the guts of its fans, it sticks with that formula.
Not if they're a true artist.
No, we're not getting into that.
I want to say something like,
okay,
like for instance, the Dead Kennedys. No two albums of theirs sound the same. They found their first album was a huge hit, and they said, all right, now we want to try something different. Next album, big hit. All right, we want to try something different. No two albums. I mean, you put any Dead Kennedys song on, I can tell you exactly what era that is from and what album that is from by the style that they're using. A band like the Dead Kennedys said, we want to change constantly. A band like the Sex Pistols did exactly what you were saying. We found our sound. We're sticking with it.
Yeah. And that's what the majority of bands do. Let's see here.
Which is, I guess, what I meant by artistry is more of a band like Motorhead is doing it for a job. Hey, this is what our fans want. This is what we're giving them. Jello Biafra, on the other hand, is saying, I want to experiment and we'll see if it works.
There will always be experimental artists out there. Thomas Dolby.
You know, and to me, that's the difference between an artist and a musician. I know it's a thin line, but to me, there's a line. You know, like, I've brought this up before. I can't remember if it was on this show. I mean, we're 128 episodes in. I don't remember all the shit we talked about. And all the shit we talk about off mic. But like Metallica, when they made the shift from Injustice for All to the Black Album, they decided, and the evidence backs me up, we don't want to be musicians anymore, we want to be rock stars. Rock stars have to sound a certain way. Rock stars have to look a certain way. we will change to become rock stars instead of musicians.
And you'll notice that their following albums, they're getting more and more synth poppy.
Right, which is the other topic I wanted to bring up in relation to music is when an artist, a musician, whatever you want to call them, changes, do you think it is because of the Metallica kind of thing that we're sick of just being musicians, we want to be rock fucking stars, so we change our sound? Or is it more of a Jello Biafra kind of thing on the average where I want to experiment and see what's going on? Like Neil Young is a perfect example. Remember when he went through his reggae phase and his country phase? And, I mean, there were albums he put out in the 80s where you'd go, I'm sorry, Neil, I get it that you wanted to try something different. That's not Neil fucking Young.
Right.
You know, is that a wise thing? Or is that something where you should at least give your fan base a little of what they want? An example would be the Bad Brains, a punk band or a hardcore band. I'm sure you're not all that familiar with.
I'm not familiar with it all.
They're four big, huge Rastafarian dudes from Washington, D.C. And they were really hard, loud, fast, hardcore music for the early 80s. And then they all found Jamaican religion and, you know, they started smoking a whole
marijuana,
lot of, and they started adding reggae to their set. Every album would have one or two reggae songs. And it got to a point where I was watching a documentary where they said this was the fall of the Bad Brains. They said, we don't want to be hardcore anymore. We're a reggae band. And so people were going to their shows going, oh, man, Bad Brains. And all they would play is reggae. And they said, people were throwing stuff on there. Play something fast. And they're like, we're not that band anymore. And it's like, well, you sold tickets as the Bad Brains. If you stopped playing like the Bad Brains, change your fucking name because you're not the Bad Brains anymore. Or do you agree or disagree with that? That they were kind of duping their fans by going, we're the Bad Brains. Yeah, we're using our old logo and we're not going to play anything like what you were expecting.
I think that's kind of a shitty thing. Excuse me. I apologize. Work still. I've got up at 3 this morning. I was at the office at 3 this morning. I think that's kind of crappy, but then if the fans haven't heard any of their recent albums or didn't know that they had made that switch, how good of fans are they? But I think for as many different people that are out there, there are different reasons for switching genre. You've got the Metallica reason from And Justice for All to the Black Album.
To me, that's a textbook definition of a sellout.
Oh, okay. Well, so, they choose because they think they have a formula for success. And if you listen to recent Metallica albums, they're getting more toward, I mean, it's almost dance metal-ish.
I think Radio Friendly warped their brains.
Yeah. But, and then you've got, I'm trying to, well, Thomas Dolby, who has done, he may not. Yes.
Is that the Blinded Me with Science guy?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Just, I want to make sure I'm
thinking
of the right person.
That was his new wave hit, but he has been very, very active behind the scenes producing music and doing tons and tons of different genres because he wants to experiment. Now, he does it the right way. Being behind the scenes, he can kind of put a different name, he can kind of work with, okay, this is my country band that I'm working with, this is my techno band that I'm working with, this is my metal band that I'm working with, and he's worked in all of those genres. He's also continued to put out his own experimental electronic music that hasn't been nearly as popular, but if you get a chance, look some of it up. Some of it can be quite haunting.
I can actually think of a relatively current example of that kind of thing. You familiar with the band Creature Feature?
I'm not no.
They put out an album that is basically like that. Every song is basically a different genre. They've got a thrash metal song, they've got a pop song, they've got a rap song, they've got a metal song, they've got a rock song, they've got a Bieber type song. Everything on there, every song is a different style. I mean, they're all horror or sci-fi themed. I mean, with a name like Creature Feature, what do you expect?
Yeah, okay.
But it's like every song is a different genre. It was kind of like, this is an album. They should have just called it Experiment the Album.
So it's a little concept album. We're going to pick a theme, in this case the sci-fi Creature Feature bass, and we're going to come up with different songs kind of based around that theme. It's it's a modern concept album.
Right, because like Aim for the Head is very rappy. Corpse in My Bed is very thrashy. You know, Look to the Skies is very poppy. So it's like all, you know, each song is very, very different.
And you got to respect that. And I'm guessing who they wanted to sell this album to were
people like me, who,
people
you
like
know,
you and I who were
horror movie and sci-fi fans.
And sci-fi fans. And so they go, okay, well, what kind of music do horror movie and sci-fi fans
listen to?
They
listen to everything.
All right, let's just do one of everything on this album. I mean, that's a neat idea, and I think that there will always be artists out there, and there will always be artists that want to experiment. You'll always find artists that, and I know a lot of artists, especially from that 80s new wave movement and the 90s emo movement, that got out of making music in the forefront. But if you read album credits or song credits, they're in the background doing the mix. They're
writing,
doing the technical side. Some went into writing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the emo movement.
Okay.
And now, I don't mean the modern one. I remember trying to watch 120 Minutes in the late 80s and early 90s, and every time The Cure would come on, I'm like, you know what? Some little fucking... And this is the word I used then, so some little fucking faggot boy is jerking off to this right now because life is so cruel and no one understands him. God, I hate that shit. The Cure is whining to music, and I hate that so much, Scott.
And you got the pronoun wrong.
What?
You said no one understands him. Bands like The Cure... And the emo bands and the screamo bands, that's one that really confuses me. Why does that genre exist? The screamo bands and stuff like that, their fans, and I talked about that formula where it hits you deep in the gut and really stirs something up.
Right.
That's what those fans, what hits those fans is that sadness. Now, you talk to Robert Smith of The Cure, and you're like, man, you got out there and you were depressed for your 3.5 hour concert. And now you're getting back on the bus. And Robert Smith is like, no, I'm in a great mood. I get all of my depression out on stage. And I get all of that angst and that emo. It's all just stays on stage. And then I come in here, the band, and I put on the Spice Girls and dance around in my underwear. You know.
Don't die.
Damn it.
But to me, like, I remember that in Morrissey. And
yeah, Morrissey
that
was
that
the same
kind
way.
Of crap. And it's just like, you know what? Shut up.
But, and you may feel that way, but again, these bands.
I used to scream at my TV. I used to scream at my TV, just hang yourself and get it over with.
But again, you talk to them off stage and they're like, yeah, life is great. I've been depressed for now. I'm in a great mood, you know.
Well, then what about with that kind of thing? Obviously, that died out. I think they're...
No, it's still going.
Well, I mean, the 90s. It died out for quite a while and it popped back up in the late 90s when the modern emo movement mm-hmm. really, really kicked up.
Right.
But you've also got ones... What about when a musician or a band or whatnot doesn't want to change? Why is that? Like, we talked about it a little bit before.
Why is Poison still Poison?
Well, or the fact that it's not working. Because, like, you know, we pointed out with, like, Motorhead, they found something that works. What about something like Poison that are still putting out Poison albums that aren't selling? Don't they get it? Maybe it's just you're doing what you want. Fair enough. But it stopped working in 1990. And you've put out 12 more albums of that same not working. I don't get that.
But they have their core fans. Poison still, they may not be selling out arenas, but they're still selling out sizable theaters.
Def Leppard played the county fair here a few years ago,
yeah,
Scott.
Yeah.
And they didn't sell that out.
I know.
These are people that used to sell out stadiums the first day tickets were available.
Yeah.
That says something about a shift in culture, not necessarily music.
But to me, I think that those bands keep going and doing what they're doing. They've made their money. They've made their mark. They like playing their music. I mean, my father-in-law, huge fan of the 50s surf music. Dick Dale and stuff like that. Dick Dale, eventually the Beach Boys and things like that. And he loves his genre of music. He was a greaser in the 50s. He was a greaser in the 60s. He kind of missed that decade other than other than the pot. But, you know, he did his thing. He found his genre of music that he really enjoys. And he's friends. He ran a record shop in Milwaukee for decades, nearly half a century. And he got to know all of these surfer musicians. He got to know a lot of the modern rappers. He's friends with Notorious B.I.G. and a few others, and Public Enemy. He's actually pretty decent friends with them because the rappers would come in and use his records for sampling. But, you know, he found his genre that he loves and that he really knows, and he still has these musicians that he hangs out with, and they still play. And they're not, you know, they're not changing up their deal. And for them, it's more nostalgic. And it's, I found what I can do, and I found what I do well. I found my sound, and I'm happy. And I may not be selling out stadiums anymore. I may not be selling out
clubs.
I may not be selling out clubs or county fairs. But look over there. That's Elise, and she still follows us around, and she's still having a good time. And I'm still having a good time, so screw it.
All right, then what about this? What about music? This goes to metal, rock, rap, everything. How it's sort of diluted itself over time. Now, whether this is a cultural thing or a certain musician thing, such as I mentioned I heard that Judas Priest song on the radio. I remember when Judas Priest was, oh, get that noise off here. It's so loud. It's so fast. My God, it is so slow. It is so just quiet. You know, it's like, have we changed that? I mean, literally, we've made this joke before. When did Motley Crue become classic rock? Because it did. The Motley Crue stuff is so tame. But remember when Shout at the Devil came out? That was so... So have we changed, or did the music change too? Or has society... kind of changed, because like Ozzy Osbourne, you listen to the first post Black Sabbath album and you listen to that whiny emo shit he's doing now, you'd never know it's the same artist.
The artists have changed a little bit just because,
but what
they
about
get
the
old
songs that never changed, but somehow society has viewed them, that their place in history seems to have changed?
It's here's an interesting experiment. If let's say we little thought experiment here, and I heard this done to a guy who actually did it on NPR. He went to an island resort, and he spent an entire year on this island resort, and the only thing that he listened to was Byzantine monks.
Okay.
Singing religiously.
I'm just picturing the opening of Kung Fu.
Not wrong kind of monks.
Okay.
Byzantine, you know, long, dark brown robes with the hoods that, oh, the chants.
Oh, I'm picturing Highlander now.
Yeah, okay, closer. But
I love how you just rolled your eyes. You do know we're in the same room and I can see that, right?
Yeah, it's a shame. But that's all that he listened to was Byzantine music, you know, that magical medieval music, which uses a very, very, very different scale and chord set than we do today. It is remarkably, shockingly different.
Okay.
So he conditioned himself to listen to this. When he came back, he put on Bach, Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. One of the most incredible, soft, soothing, classical bits of music that I adore that song. As far as classical music goes, it's one of my all-time favorites.
If I got to go classical music, it's probably going to be Ride of the Valkyries or Sonata No. 3.
Sure,
But you'll notice those are also faster, so that's more my style.
I know. But he puts on Yesu Joy of Man's Desiring, and he sits back, and he said that he was appalled and shocked, and that this the music itself was... He said it was like fingers on a chalkboard. It was using the wrong scale, using the wrong chords. We had moved from a minor chord-based bit of music, which a lot of Byzantine chants and stuff like that are, they're done on a very minor scale. He had moved over to the major scale. Now, you ask people today, you know, which is more depressing, which is more shocking, and it's always the minor scale, because you hit one of those minor chords and it somehow speaks to the modern audience of, now it's time for you to cry.
But so are you saying he had become conditioned?
He had become so conditioned to this particular scale, to this particular sound, that even something that today we see as a beautiful masterwork of classical music that couldn't offend anyone offended him to its core. And this isn't, I mean, God forbid he put on something like Sadness Part D. Okay, bad example, because that's based around chants. But
how does that tie into us as a culture having kind of lost Ozzy Osbourne? Even, and I'm not talking about new Ozzy, go back and listen to that first album that was so shocking. How is that something that you could put on a children's album nowadays? Society has been conditioned? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say. Music and the message of that music changes to such a degree that what was once shocking becomes mundane. And you have to go find new ways to look at somebody and go, hey, you're offended. Hey, penis in the face, you're offended. You know, and that's and not necessarily offended. You have to find new ways to shock people. That's just the way it is. I mean, compare Mozart to Hans Zimmer. Both in the classical genre.
You know, both... when you said Hans Zimmer, I don't know why my brain immediately went to Jan Hammer.
Not Jan Hammer. Not Jan Hammer.
I'm sorry. That's immediately where my head went, was the Miami Vice theme. Like, what the hell kind of comparison are you making here, dude? Like,
no.
No, I'm serious. No. Jan Hammer was the first place my brain went.
I mean, really.
That says more about me than it does you. But
Moonlight Sonata, Miami Vice love theme, which is one I don't... Did he do the main... Did Jan Hammer do the... Main Miami Vice? I don't think
yes,
so.
Yes, he did. Yeah. That was Jan Hammer.
Okay.
We'll look it up on YouTube when you're done. But yes, that was Jan Hammer.
Oh my God, you want to talk about a nice 1980s synthy sound.
The whole thing. Love Miami Vice. Shut up.
I'm not picking on Miami Vice. I had the album on CD.
I have it on album. I have it on LP.
You have the album on album?
I have the album on album, fucker. Album on album.
Vinyl,
but then okay.
The word you were searching. But anyway, well, no. compare Mozart to Hans Zimmer. They're both classical artists. They're both highly regarded for their day. And I realize that a lot of people are going, "What are you, the film music dude?" But trust me, in classical theater, in neoclassical music, he's one of the highest praised artists out there. Him, John Williams,
Jerry Goldsmith.
Yeah, Jerry Goldsmith. The one that did all the.
You gotta admit, but anyway. If you're talking about those, can't remember the composer's name. The guy that does all the soundtracks for the Michael Bay movies, like The Rock and The Island and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that shit's very classical style, but very, I hate to say it, Michael Bay-ish.
Yeah, and I was the one that did all the Tim Burton, like the Batman theme.
Danny Elfman.
It's Danny Elfman. Thank you. Although Danny Elfman has fallen out of favor here recently.
Well, okay, then how about something like Danny Elfman? You've got Danny Elfman scoring all these movies, and then you've got Oingo Boingo. that Danny Elfman also writes.
Sure.
Do you think he tries to keep those two things separate? That I don't want my Oingo Boingo style to go into the movies, but I don't want my movie style to go into Oingo Boingo.
No, I don't think he tries to keep them separate at all. I think that he is looking for two. Number one, Oingo Boingo is not around anymore. He doesn't do that anymore.
I'm just saying.
I think it was one artist who wanted two different creative outlets. It's even us being voice artists. We've got this show that we do. You've got WTF, which is a very different show, but you started that show because you wanted an outlet for that modern political, for lack of a better word, edge stuff. And you wanted an outlet for, you know, and then you brought on Hart because you had a change of creative idea. And I think music is very much the same way. I think Danny Elfman, during 80s New Wave, he did his Oingo Boingo thing, and then he turned and he went, you know what, I kind of like movies, and I've got this friend named Tim who wants to make some movies. And so I think I'll do Beetlejuice for him. And I'll come up with this theme that he'll then use in every fucking movie ever fucking made.
Well, then, what about then the way America, and I can only speak for America on this, but the way America looks at various forms of music without taking merits into consideration, such as, you know, if you say heavy metal, first place your head probably goes is Poison, Motley Crue, right? Instead of going to Anthrax or anything like that. But like if you say heavy metal, everyone thinks of big poofy hair, you know, lots of guys singing with high voices and wearing women's clothes. Is that the way our culture has moved to heavy metal is a joke? I mean, it's just like rap. Not all rap is about dealing drugs, smacking hoes, and shooting and popping caps in people's asses. But if you say rap, that's the first image that enters your head.
Right. And that's
simply because... Is that a cultural issue, or do you think the music kind of... It almost became self-parody after a while, every genre.
And I think that's right. You will always have... Number one, when I look at you and I say that all metal is exactly the same, punk is metal, therefore punk sounds exactly like metal.
Punk is not metal.
Okay.
I'm sorry, they're vastly different kinds of music.
But they sound exactly the same to me. They're just guys thrashing, and they're kind of girly, and they don't really, you know, I mean, sound the same to me.
You're an idiot.
No, Josh, I don't believe this. I know the difference.
I know.
But
my
response to your question is
you're an idiot.
You're an idiot. Let me take a genre you're completely unfamiliar with. Let's go with it started in the late 70s and continued up until about the mid 90s. And I think the one band that was able to break out and really make an impact in people's lives, and this was chiefly due to a Christmas album, was Mannheim Steamroller.
Okay, I'm familiar with them, yeah.
Yeah, the new age synth, almost meditative genre of music. I could probably play three different subgenres that a fan would go, okay, now that's new age, that's the 90s more dance stuff, and that is the modern meditation or binaural sound. That, you know, they're all in the same genre, but they're three vastly different subgenres. Or when I look at you and I go, okay, Anthrax, Poison, and Judas Priest are all metal bands. They all sound exactly the same.
And then I'd punch you in the dick.
Right. But to a non-metal fan, they do. We're done.
Yeah.
Holy cow, this one went away.
Yeah, that's why I keep looking at the clock. I'm like, you're just going on. You realize we got to wrap up, right?
Okay, anyway, but... You know, to a non-fan, you will always have those sub-genres that are missed to the person that's just getting into it. And you will always have the one that raises up and becomes a parody of itself.
Right. But I just thought this was a topic I wanted to bounce off of you because I knew you'd have a probably vastly different thought process than I do.
Okay. And I appreciate all of the fans joining us today. It's good to be back. It's good to record with you. It's been a while.
And if the Jackalope server changeover happens, maybe this will even air.
Maybe. Who knows?
Who knows?
Let's get that fixed. So,
God damn
next
it.
Week.
Would you just stop the fucking... We're done talking.
No. I'm not stopping until 55 minutes. They want 55 minutes. They get 55 minutes no matter...